Welcome to the Punk Rock NBA Podcast.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to the Punk Rock NBA Podcast. Today's guest is Chris Rossin from Stick to Your Guns and formerly of Walls of Jericho. Chris is one of these people that I guess you could call a hardcore lifer. He's been in the scene for, 20, 25 years. I've known him for maybe about 7 or 8 years, so I just wanted to sit down with him and kind of talk about what it means to be one of these hardcore lifers, what it means to be someone who's our age that's spent half your life in the scene, in his case, playing in bands. So we talked about that, what made the 90s hardcore scene special to us, why we're excited about the state of hardcore today, and also some grown-up stuff like what happens when you have a kid, how does that change you, some stuff like that. So if that sounds interesting to you, then stick around, you're going to enjoy this one. Also, I wanted to give a shout out to the show's editor and producer, Deanna Chapman. If you need help putting your podcast together, I would highly recommend giving her a call. You can find her at deannachapman.com. That's deannachapman.com. You can also find the link to that in the show notes. Thank you, as always, to Deanna for all her help. The show definitely could not happen without her. So yeah, with that out of the way, let's get into it. All right, so here we are in my car outside the show. You guys are playing tonight with Beartooth and Motionless and White. First day of the tour. Thanks for squeezing this in. I appreciate it. You just got done being sweaty and jumping around.
Yep. You're killing it with your podcast voice.
Hey, everybody. Right. Welcome back. Please welcome Chris from Stick to Your Guns, the podcast. So last time you were here with Knocked Loose, and who else was on that? It was
Knocked Loose, Rotting Out.
Candy was on.
Candy and CU Space Cowboy.
Yes. Yeah. So this is a little bit of a departure. You know, that felt to me like a hardcore tour. This is obviously more of like a rock tour.
Yeah, that one's for sure like our vibe. This one is like trying to win new people over.
Right. Well, we've known each other for a long time. And I want to talk about like something that you mentioned to me when we were talking about that Knocked Loose show. And then I made a video about it, which is just about how that show to me felt like a show from 97 in all the good ways. And you said that, a few other people said that, and you mentioned that you were excited about that because you wanted to like bring back the vibe of like the golden years of, you know, the Victory scene. And
yeah,
most people listening to this are probably not old enough to have experienced that firsthand. So I just kind of wanted to talk a little bit about, you know, about that era and why it is special to you and me, and I don't know, just kind of explore that a little bit because I think a lot of people would be interested in that.
All right. Where do you want to start with that?
Well, so one thing that's interesting about you is you are very mild-mannered, like nice human, you know?
I try to be.
But you grew up in one of the most fucked up parts of the 90s hardcore scene, the like greater Detroit area. Can you kind of talk a little bit about what that scene was like and how you being, I mean, unless you were a crazy person back then, which I don't think you were, how did you kind of fit in with all that?
I don't know. When I first started going to shows, I was definitely scared, you know?
Like, probably for good reason.
Yeah, like that was part of the excitement of it. So for me, it was like I was real young in like, I would say early to mid 90s. That's like the, like, gangster rap is becoming popular, like all this stuff. So it's like lots of macho-ness in like mainstream music, I guess. And the first bands, the bands that I was already into, like I was getting into, like I was more of a metal kid getting into like Biohazard, you know, which has like a street vibe and all that shit. And then from there, it's like I got into bands like Cold as Life, which would be like local heroes for us. But as like a, I don't know, 15-year-old, I thought in my head, which is a terrible way to think, like I was just like, oh, this is what I'm gonna do when I grow up. I'm gonna get face tattoos and like can't wait, like no one's gonna stop me, this is gonna be awesome. And then luckily for me, I start going to shows in like Detroit and all those people are very nice to me, but then I find kids that I realize are more like me, like I see myself in them, and those are like the younger straight edge kids and everything. And then I just started gravitating towards that versus like going like, oh, these guys, I don't want to like shit talk anybody of my, sound like I'm shit talking anybody who legitimately has fucked up lives.
It's just not who we are. I kind of had the same thing. It's like, oh, that's
cool. Yeah, it's like I saw it and I it's almost like I saw it as like a fantasy life when I was a kid. And then when I started going to shows, I'd be like, oh, that's kind of fucked up, you know? And then I was like, oh, but like for me, it was like the band Earth Mover. So it was like, there was Cold as Life and there was Earth Mover. And then I would go to both those shows. And in the beginning, I looked at Cold as Life like, yeah, this is me. This is what I'm going to do. And then eventually it was just like, no, these are actually my people, you know? And not that Cold as Life aren't my people. Like, I'm friends with some of those dudes, but like,
you're just cut from a different cloth.
Yeah. I'm coming from Canada, just pretty chill and like nice. And they were always nice to me, but it was just like, oh, I just gravitated towards like the younger straight edge kids and not face tattoos and going to jail.
Right. You know? Well, so that's an interesting thing that I think is worth kind of talking about is there's sort of a perception that those like face tattoo guys that go to jail are assholes at shows and beating everyone up and bullying everyone and stuff. And that's kind of what I expected because we didn't have any of that around here when I was a kid. And then I moved to Cleveland in 96 and there were some people like that, you know, I mean, that's not too far away from Detroit, yeah. You know, it's like that. And I was expecting those people to be giant assholes because that's what everybody said in the zines and stuff like that. And they were actually all super nice. Oh, I've super never nice. Had a single bad experience with any of those type of people.
Yeah, like my band in high school, like my first real hardcore band or whatever, we played Cold as Life CD, like Born to Land Hard CD release show.
Oh, shit.
And Jeff G, the singer, who's now in prison, which is a bum out, you know, but he called my mom's house to like talk to me about it. And like the whole, I'm like, oh my God, Jeff G's calling me. Like, this is, my mom would be like, Chris, Jeff is on the phone.
Dude, I would still be excited, you know, if Jeff called my house.
I'm like, this isn't, to me, I was just like blown away. I'm like, this is insane. But they just respected what we were doing, you know? Probably because at that point, it was like, I already figured out like, oh, I'm not like them, mm-hmm. but I could still love their music, you know? And I could still go and fuck and like pit, mm-hmm. you know, and just have a good time. But I feel like whether you're a real like tough guy or goon or whatever, you know, like that, you'll see if someone's trying to fake be a tough guy, you know?
Right.
And I never tried to do that. Like when I was real young, I thought that's what I wanted to do. But as I actually became like involved in the scene, it was just kind of like, oh, this is just me. And everyone's like, all right, okay, cool.
you get know? A little bit closer yeah. and see what it is. And you're like, oh, you know what? I'm going to pass.
Yeah. So I never, for me personally, I just never tried to like pose as a tough guy or have like a thing. I just want to jump on people and sing along and like, oh, you guys are fighting. That's probably a bad idea.
Right.
You know, like that was always my vibe.
It was interesting to me that I kind of realized, I don't know if this is your experience, but I realized that I had been deceived a little bit by, you know, the scene, that I was told that they were the bad guys and it turns out they were actually really nice. And the people that said they were the bad guys were oftentimes the gossipy, shit-talking jerks. Oh,
100%.
And I was like, oh, this is the exact opposite of what I thought it was.
I feel like that happens with everything. Like even we got, like by the time I started playing in Walls of Jericho, we got in shit for, we had signed to Trustkill and like the kids at the scene at the time was upset with that. Like we were sellouts for signing to Trustkill, which at the time the big Trustkill bands were like Harvest. You know what right. I mean? Like that was selling out. Like it wasn't, this is pre Poison the Well, Bleeding Through, like all that shit, you know? It was like Harvest and Despair. And to me, I was like, yeah, we're doing it. This is gonna be fun. We're on a real hardcore label. This is gonna be fucking awesome. And they put out an ad that Candace, our singer, was wearing a wristband because for some reason we made up this thing where we're like, we're all gonna wear wristbands because it's fun or whatever, you know? And she had one that had she was wearing a Nike wristband and it had like a swoosh on
Uh-oh.
It. And fucking that ad got plastered out and everyone freaked out. Like people were like upset. Like there were certain venues that didn't want us to like play their venue because we're supporting Nike. And like all this shit. And I'm like, what is happening? Right. We literally are the same people from like, I've been wearing Nikes. You never complained before. It was just like, as soon as we like signed a Trustkill and had ads or posters, like it was a sellout. It was weird.
Well,
weird time.
So all that being said, I think, you know, both of us look back on that time fondly, like we were just talking about. What is it about that era that stands out to you? Like, what's the good side of it?
That's the era for me where I made, like, lifelong friendships. Like there's people that I'm friends with that still go to shows and they're from that era. And there's people I'm friends with that I'll be friends with for the rest of my life that aren't even involved in hardcore anymore, but we're so active at the time. Like for me, it just felt like that's all we had, you know? And it felt like important in some way. Like I felt in the moment, like it was truly like a movement of like, oh, we could possibly change the world, and fuck, like it just felt great. So it's like I've always wanted to be able to recapture that energy. So even with Stick to Your Guns, it's like that's what I personally strive for. I want it to be like when we walk out on stage, not that we're like uber vegan straight edge or anything like that, but when I would go to an Earth Crisis show back then and they would walk out and they all had camo pants on or some shit like that, I'd be like, oh, shit's about to get real. You know, like this is like, it gave me a vibe.
Totally.
And it's like, I just love that vibe. I've always been chasing it, I guess, you know?
How would you describe that vibe exactly? Is it about like the message or just, or?
It's not even the message. Cause even like Cold as Life had that vibe. They would walk out on stage, you'd be like, oh yeah, it's about to fucking go, you know? And like, I don't know what it is. I don't know if it's the message or if it's like just how the people in the bands carry themselves. I don't know what it is, but there was like an energy there that I feel when I go see, I don't want to make it sound like I'm an old guy shitting on new bands, but when I go see newer bands, it's like lacking. But then a band like Knock Loose comes along and then I'm like, oh, it's there, you know, like that. That whole tour to me felt like that could have been like the California Takeover to me or something, you know, like even though I never flew out to California for that shit, but I got to see all those bands back then. And anytime Earth Crisis would come or Snapcase would come, it was just the entire scene showed up and everyone crawled on each other and sang along. And that's the same vibe that happened when we were out with Knock Loose.
Well, Terror for sure had that.
Yeah. You know, oh, yeah. Totally.
I mean, they still do, but.
Yeah, know, no, like, they Terror does. There's still bands that definitely do, but I feel like, at least when I go to like shows locally now, it's like a lot of fucking huge Horseshoe and like,
you know, at that time, hardcore, that style of hardcore, the clay was still wet. Like people didn't really know exactly what it was. It was still being figured out, you know? And I think with any kind of scene, whether that's like music or I don't know, like any kind of art, once people sort of define the form, then a lot of people that come afterwards just sort of check off all the boxes of what you do when you're in a straight edge band or what you do when you're in a pop punk band. And there's, you know, if you're having fun doing that, then cool. But for me personally, when it becomes just sort of a checklist of things you do, it loses that sense of like energy that it had to me when, like, you know, when Earth Crisis was doing something that was like challenging. You know, and if it's not challenging anymore, it's just kind of not interesting. And like that show, the Knock Loose show that you guys played, I felt the same thing because all those bands have a unique thing. Like they have that vibe. Like even See Space Cowboy, I'm pretty sure they were the first band that
played. Yeah, they were the first.
I got that vibe from them.
What I really loved about that show was that era of Victory also had like Snapcase didn't sound like Earth Crisis. Earth Crisis didn't sound like Strife. You know, like everyone had their own identity. And that show was like Knock Loose was Knock Loose. Nobody on the bill sounded like Knock Loose. Nobody on the bill sounded like Stick to Your Guns. No one sounded like Rotting Out. No one sounded like Can't. Like everybody had their own identity and it worked.
Exactly.
Whereas now I feel like there's lots of tours where it's just like you're going to get four bands that sound like Knock Loose and you're gonna get four bands that sound like fucking Candy. There really is no one I think that can do Rotting Out.
Right.
Other than Rotting Out.
Right.
Because I think if you tried, everyone would be like, yeah, you're just jocking Rotting Out
right now.
But I think that's part of what's missing. Not missing, because I feel like it's back.
Yeah.
I guess, you know? But it was missing for a long time. There was multiple times where it's like every single local band that would open for us sounded like Terror, you know?
Right.
Just like, oh, here's another band. They sound like Terror.
There was, you know, the 5 years or so after the Bridge Nine era, which I think was special in the same way that like the Victory era was.
See, I missed out on a lot.
It wasn't my thing necessarily, but Have Heart and those bands, definitely that was a special time.
Oh, for sure, you know? It was.
So I don't care for that style, but it was special. And then there was the, you know, 5 or 7 or so years after that, which I call the shitty Terror era.
That's funny.
And yeah, it feels like it's back. And it feels like people, you know, people care about something. I guess that's what it is to me, is like when I feel like a band is just checking all the boxes because they don't really have any better idea, you know? And I feel like a band like Sea of Space Cowboy and Knock Loose, it feels like they care about something, which to me is the common thread of all the Victory kind of bands.
I think it's cool too to see, like, there was an era for a while where I feel like, I'm not saying like every band needs to be political or have like an agenda kind of thing, but it seemed like there was an era where it was just music.
You know, it's kind of like, and why would you play hardcore if you don't care about something?
Yeah, and now even like a band like Knock Loose, like, they're not necessarily like known for, I'm not trying to talk down Brian's lyrics or whatever, but Brian's not saying
super
like,
deep, profound,
like super shit, but they'll go and they'll do a shirt and raise money for like domestic violence or whatever and do shit like, and I think that's rad. I think that's necessary to be what this is supposed to be, at least to me.
Let's talk a little bit more about the friendship thing, because that was another thing that I felt at that show. You know, there's people there that, you know, I saw like Chris from Champion there and some other people that I've known for like 20 plus years. I saw like our neighbor was there, who's like 17, you know. Sick. I saw him there and everybody in between. And that really is like the most special thing to me. I talked about this in the video, but when I would go to those shows, I didn't even know who was playing every show. I would just go because I knew that there was going to be 50 people there that I knew. And not to say that I'm like Mr. Cool popular guy, because I definitely wasn't, but like, it's just people that you would know.
Yeah.
And that really is the most special part of the whole thing to me. The fact that there's people that I've known for 20 some years that I'm closer with than some of my family members. And I wonder if that is unique to hardcore, or is that just because it's where we come from? Like, is that true? Are there people in the thrash metal scene that say the same things?
I
feel like it's different, but maybe
I feel like
I'm
it's
not.
Different too. But yeah, I could be wrong, because I was never a part of that.
Right.
You know? I always viewed hardcore as like, this is my idealistic view of it, was like, I got into it because I thought metal had ego, you know, which once like I started becoming like more like full-time touring type thing, I started realizing, oh, all these hardcore kids are just as petty as like these metal dudes.
Maybe in slightly, you know, different ways.
And then, ways. But, and then I would like get in situations with metal bands where I was just like, these guys are dicks. But then I'd meet one where I'm like, no, these guys are fucking cool as fuck. Like, these guys get it. These guys don't get it. And I feel like that goes probably in any scene. So there has to be a thrash scene where a guy's like, ah, oh, man, we've been fucking thrashing together since 86, you know, or whatever.
Well, I think there's an interesting thing about hardcore though, where if somebody is still involved in hardcore into, I don't know, let's call it like their mid-20s or something like that, you kind of go one of two ways, where you end up doing something that's maybe a little bit cooler than average with your life, or you become a complete loser. I mean, I'm exaggerating a little bit, but it's hardcore is an interesting thing where there's some really exceptional people, you know, I don't know, like Ben from Dillinger, for example, you know? Very exceptional person. And then there's other people that, obviously I'm not going to name anybody, but there's other people that ended up like, unfortunately, becoming, you know, kind of burnouts and unhappy people. And I think it's interesting in hardcore in particular that there's those two kind of real extremes to me.
Yeah, I mean, that probably happens with everything in society though. You know, somebody gets involved in, what if you're a guy who plays
backgammon.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, right. you're constantly going to pool halls all the time. You're crushing it at the pool hall when you're like 20, and then when you're like 40, they're just kind of like, "Is this guy still here?"
Probably true. Or it's like, "God damn it, that guy is amazing at pool."
Or that guy's crushing it. He's on the pool tour. Right. I don't know if that's
Well, so speaking of which, when did you kind of realize or decide that you were going to, you know, play in hardcore bands for a living? You know, because at a certain point, it's
completely
like,
on accident. Yeah. It was never planned. I mean, I always just wanted to go on tour. That was like the goal. So like my first band was just like, I just want a tour. And then we hit that age where it's like, people are graduating from high school. Next thing you know, one guy gets a job in a factory. So that kills that. And somebody else gets another job doing something else. And I'm like, what is happening? And the whole thing falls apart. Then Earth Mover breaks up. They start a new band. They do a demo and a 7-inch. And I was just friends with all of them. And then they needed a guitar player. So then they asked me to play guitar. And the phone call that I got paged which is funny. Right. I had a pager, and I got.
What is a pager? Tell us what that is, because a lot of people don't know what that is.
It's in the 90s when someone was trying to get a hold of you, because not everyone, no one had a phone. You would get a beep.
A cell phone.
Yeah, no one had a cell phone. Everyone just had landlines.
So you're out and about, and
yeah, and there's pay phones everywhere, and you're driving around with your friends, and all of a sudden you get a page that has somebody's phone number that you don't know. You pull over, you go to a pay phone, you call it, and then you're like, "Yo, did someone page me?" And then the guy on the line goes, "Yeah, it's Mike from Walls of Jericho." And I was like, "Oh shit, what's up?" And he's like, "Hey, you want to join Walls of Jericho?" And I was just like, "All right." It was so, what a weird way to join a band now, saying that in current times, but. Yeah,
nowadays,
back then, that was completely normal.
Send me an Instagram DM.
I actually officially joined the band at a Trial show.
Mm.
Yeah, I went to see Trial, Botch, and Walls of Jericho. He paged me to like come and like try out, and I tried out, and then I went to that show, and then they were like, "Hey, join the band. We're going on tour next week. Quit your job." And I was just like, "All right."
So this is like 2002-ish.
No, this is like 99.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay.
The end of 99. So they had done a 7-inch, but not a full length yet.
Got it.
Yeah.
And then you did that for a few years, and you know, still at that point, you're, you know, young enough that you could still decide to do something else with your life.
Yeah. And I honestly never, even when we did our first record on Trustkill, I was just like, okay, well, I'll probably go to Europe and then I'll quit, because hardcore bands do like a 7-inch, a full length, and then they're like, that's what I thought the lifespan of this was. So I just wanted to like travel the country maybe once or twice, maybe get to Europe, that would be tight, and it would be over. But then it just like just kept snowballing, kind of thing. And I never thought about it was always just like moving the goalpost of like, okay, well, now I went to Europe, oh, the band's not breaking up, we're still all friends, so now we're gonna do this, and now we're gonna do this. And then ended up doing that for so long that it got to the point where it's like we're all adults, and then our singer got married, started a family, she got pregnant, and then we're like, well, you can't go on tour with a pregnant lady screaming and jumping on people, that's just a weird look. So then we had taken Stick to Your Guns to Europe, I was friends with them, and then I heard they needed a guitar player, so then I just hit them up, because I was gonna go back to school, but our touring schedule made it so I missed the fall semester. So then I was like, oh fuck, well I guess I'll probably go in January. And I hit up Stick to Your Guns, went, heard you need a guitar player, I'm gonna be doing nothing till January. And then they were like, help us write a record.
12 years later, or
yeah,
whatever.
Yeah, now I've been in the band, and now I've been in Stick to Your Guns for like 10 years, which is crazy.
What were you going to go to school for?
Honestly, I don't know. I just thought, well, I got to do something. I was getting ready to plan it out. I had started, before I joined Walls of Jericho, I was going to school for electronics engineering. And then I dropped out to go on tour.
That's not an easy major.
Yeah, I only did one semester. Okay. And then I focused on riffs.
Got it. So. Yeah, when you realize you're gonna have to take like 6 quarters of calculus, you're like, yeah, you know, maybe I'll do the riffs.
Yeah, it was brutal.
Yeah.
Hey, this is Steve Choi, host of the Musicians Guild podcast, part of the Sound Talent Media podcast network. Within the four walls of the Musicians Guild, we'll be discussing the habits, idiosyncrasies, experiences, and general psychology of my friends and peers, all involved with music in various capacities. Listen and subscribe at soundtalentmedia.com.
Hi, this is Chad Nicefield.
And this is Justin Press.
We're the host of Making Waves, the Shiprock podcast, a part of the Sound Talent Media podcast network. We're inviting you to sail away with us on an epic journey in musical enlightenment. Every week, we bring you only the best artists in rock music and discuss everything from the cruise to the stage to the saga of being a professional recording artist. We'll have lots of special guests along the way, so tune in every week.
Your stateroom is available every Monday morning, so welcome aboard.
But first, I want to thank DistroKid for sponsoring this episode of the podcast. If you're not familiar, DistroKid is a digital music distribution service that musicians use to put their music into online stores and streaming services. So in plain language, if you have ever wondered how to get your music on iTunes, Spotify, Apple Music, YouTube Music, Amazon, Deezer, Tidal, and many, many more, there's like dozens and dozens of different streaming services, DistroKid is the way to do it. It is super easy. I have used it to put my music on Spotify. It took me maybe 5 minutes to like set it up and upload everything. It's legitimately awesome. I am sincerely a fan of this company and their product. And for those of you who have asked, you can also upload your music to TikTok with DistroKid. And if you want a chance to get featured on DistroKid's Spotify playlists, You can do that by submitting a song through Spotlight and getting your fans to vote for you. You can also use Hyperfollow to get more Spotify followers. You can promote your new release as well as Spotify Canvas. That's where there's the video in the background in the player, and when you share it on Instagram, it shares that video too, to make your Spotify release pop. And Spotify Canvas is available to all DistroKid artists. Like I said, as you can probably tell from this, like, I am sincerely a fan of DistroKid. DistroKid can do everything I just talked about and so much more. So be sure to sign up with my link, which is in the show notes for this episode, to get 7% off your first year. That link is in the show notes of this episode, or go to distrokid.com/VIP/thepunkrockNBA. And thanks again to DistroKid for sponsoring this episode.
And you're a couple years younger than me, I think, maybe, but not
by
much.
How old are you?
41?
40.
Okay, so yeah. Just barely, yeah. As I like to say, I just turned 30 11 years ago.
I'm starting to feel weird about saying my age now for some reason.
God, I hate it. It's awful.
And I'm mostly weird about it because it's like, okay, so we just played this show, you know, and like that crowd's really young.
Yeah.
And it just makes me, like, I start to be like, oh man, like, these kids don't want to see their uncle, like, on stage, like, jumping around, you know? So I consciously am like, at some point, someone's going to look up at me and go, I don't relate to that guy. He's not like me. The same way I looked at Cold as Life and went, I'm not so much like them. I'm like this, you know? And I feel it's at least punk, hardcore and stuff. And even, like, hip hop probably is like, it's a young person's game.
It is. I think
you don't age well.
I think that's less true now than it was 20 years ago, but it's definitely true.
Like, yeah. I feel like you could be old, and like AF still does shit. And
sure.
And it's awesome. And yeah. It's inspiring.
Scott Vogel's older than us, all this stuff.
Yeah. Like, but the current relevant shit is Knock Loose. Those dudes are like 22.
Right.
You know? You're like young as fuck. So right. It just makes me go like, oh, fuck, man. I'm as old as Brian from Knock Loose's girlfriend. So that's their like merch girl. As her mom. It's crazy. And like, my wife came out to the show we played in Chicago, and her mom came out and she was like, you gotta meet my mom. And I like met her and stuff. And right. I'm like, what is happening? What am I doing? Like, is it time?
Like, well, how do you feel about that?
Part of me thinks it's cool. So, you know, part of me is like, holy shit. Like, I always look at my life and like, I don't know, like chunks of what normal people have to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I always go like, okay, well, if I were to stop today, like, I've been basically touring full time for like 20 years, you know? So if I were to stop today, I'm like, I would only have to be a normal person till I'm 65, you know? So that's only this small chunk. And then I'm like, oh, well, if I go to 50, you know, like, I'm always just like, oh, that's crazy. Like, even if it ended today, I'm grateful. Like, I feel like I never anticipated any of this. So it's a good run.
I think about the same thing all the time. Obviously, my audience is primarily quite a bit younger than me. Same thing. And I'm just like, God, am I, you know, someone would be like, oh, I got into this because my dad was into Earth Crisis. And I'm like, fuck. Like,
oh, no.
And I have that same kind of question of like, what am I doing? You know, but then on the other hand, I think like, well, man, what if a bunch of 18-year-olds are listening to 22-year-olds tell them what to do with their lives? I'm like, oh, I can't let that happen.
Yeah. That'd be awful. Honestly, I feel like being around a band like Knock Loose like is inspiring to me. Like, I try to make it so it's like, I don't want to like look down at like the younger kids doing something new. Like, I want to be inspired by it, and I look for things that how I can learn from them. You know, the same way that like I have discussions with them that I know, like we talk about like, oh, if you're buying a house, blah, blah, blah. You know, like
right.
And anything from like, oh, guitar tones and stuff, like I'll take anything from anyone that I think is, I don't know, doing something.
If you can like, learn worthwhile. From somebody,
yeah.
Do it. Yeah.
And I feel like a lot of older people are just like, oh, this isn't hardcore. This isn't that. Or like,
I remember
you hit a certain age and then you just turn into a shitty old guy. And
right.
I consciously fight that.
Like when I was a kid listening to, you know, whatever, Sepultura or something, and some old person would tell me to, you know, turn that shit off and listen to Television or X. And I would be like, but that sounds terrible to me. That sounds like boring 70s rock. And, you know, if people like that stuff, that's cool. But the point is, like, nobody wants that old person to come along and tell them to stop enjoying something.
Yeah, totally.
It's such a weird impulse.
Yeah, there was, when I was a kid, like, anytime someone, like people will attack Stick to Your Guns and say, like, Stick to Your Guns isn't a hardcore band, yeah, you guys, blah, 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 whatever, you know? Or, like, almost think it's, like a diss to, like, refer to us as, like, oh, we're, like, an entry-level band, you know? Which I think, I take it as, like, a compliment more than anything. Like, when I hear that, I go, like, oh, like, all the other bands that I grew up that, like, truly impacted my life. Like, that's how I view it. So, like, when I was a kid, I would have older hardcore kids who were, like, older skinhead dudes, like, that would, like, hang around my sister and stuff. Dudes would just be like, this isn't hardcore. Like, Earth Crisis isn't hardcore. That's metal, you know? Because they want punk.
Right.
You know? So when they're saying that and I'm a kid, I'm like, no, this is hardcore. I used to pride myself on being like, oh, you like old school hardcore? I like new school hardcore. You know, like, I used to pride myself on that shit, which is funny now because, like, what's new? The shit I like is, like, middle school.
Right.
I don't know what the fuck that is, you know, but I just don't want to do that to anybody ever, like, put down their music or, I don't know, I'm just rambling now.
Well, let's talk about that with Stick to Your Guns, because I think it's true that Stick to Your Guns is an entry level band. Like you said, I don't think that's a bad thing at all.
Yeah, entry oh, like Earth Crisis or Snapcase, you know, like that's like, they got to the point where those bands were entry level bands, you know?
Right.
So it's like, and it's 2020 and we're still talking about them. So that's fucking cool.
They did something.
Yeah.
And for you guys, it's an interesting thing. We've talked about this before, where you guys have consciously made a, and tell me if I'm getting anything wrong here, but consciously made a decision to be like a scene-friendly band. But you guys are all, you know, guys from the hardcore scene talking about the same stuff that hardcore bands talk about. I mean, it is hardcore in spirit. The packaging is just a little bit different.
Yeah. I don't know if it's like on purpose or not. I know it's on, it's
or at least you're okay with it.
Yeah, to me it's more of just like I identify as, even though I feel like a hardcore kid even though I'm like fucking 40 or whatever, you know, like when I'm listening to music to inspire me to like write new songs, I'm listening to Turmoil, you know, like I'm not listening to what a scene band like Beartooth is doing. And not, they can do their own thing, that's fucking cool, but I'm listening to that, and then I'm trying to just write good songs. That's all I'm ever trying to
do. But I mean, you guys have singing, not just screaming.
Yeah,
I mean,
even but also like itself. VOD did. So like, everything that we do to me is, I view it as hardcore. Even though I get people going like, oh, you're not a hardcore band, but I feel like it's mostly associated with we're willing to try to branch out and play to anyone.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I feel like the backlash, I don't feel like we have a backlash, but like anybody who would say different about our band, it's because they don't like the bands that we'll associate ourselves with.
And that was one of the, I think, most important things that the, you know, 90s hardcore bands like VOD and Snapcase and Earth Crisis did, was they went out with metal bands. They would go out with Machine Head and Sepultura and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And you know, Earth Crisis on Ozfest, and for sure that got some chunk of that metal audience into hardcore.
Oh, 100%. Even like Walls of Jericho, a long time. These bands very much, I feel like, laid the blueprint for how I would say a band like Stick to Your Guns operates and stuff. But we were on tour with not Stick to Your Guns, but Walls of Jericho was on tour with Madball one time. We got a tour offer for a band. I'm just gonna not say who the band is. But we got a tour offer and we were gonna headline, and this was at a time where, this is before we had done like Ozfest stuff. So this is the beginning of us about to like cross over. And we were nervous about how people would interpret that, you know? So this is like 2003 or some shit like that.
People being like,
people being hardcore kids. Yeah, hardcore kids. We already had like this weird thing with like their Nike logos. We didn't want to alienate people, really, because we were like, these are our people, you know? You want people like you, you know? And then we're on tour with Madball, and we were talking to them about this offer, should we do it, blah, 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 and all this shit. And those dudes were just like, yo, AF went out with, like, Obituary, you know? They were just like, they helped build the scene. They built the scene by doing shit like that. And then like Walls of Jericho got taken out by Sick of It All a bunch of times, and we would talk to them about it, and they would just be like, oh, well, we went out and we opened for Slayer, mm-hmm. you know? And then we were just like, oh.
I saw Sick of It All. Well, actually, I guess it was the other way around, but I saw Korn open for Sick of It All.
Yeah, yeah. I guess they, at the time, I viewed them as like the gatekeepers of what hardcore is and stuff. They were like pushing us to do that shit.
Well, so, I mean, that's fair to me if Madball and Sick of It All are telling you to do something.
Yeah,
you
like
know,
they were like pushing us. They were like, no, go out and reach as many people as possible, because this is how this whole thing was built. And they like, I mean, the other guys in Walls of Jericho are a little older than me, and like even talking with them, they would just be like, oh yeah, fucking Cro-Mags went out with Megadeth, you know, and like all this shit. And that's how we justified all of our moves, you know. And now with Stick to Your Guns, it's like we don't even think about it. It's just like, oh, we got this offer for Beartooth and Motionless. This will be big. A lot of these people aren't gonna know who we are. Mm-hmm. Let's fucking rope them in, you know.
Well, and I talked about this a little bit in my Earth Crisis video, which I don't know if you saw that or not, but...
Oh, I did. Anytime you go 90s, I watch.
Okay. I really do think that those bands did make an impact on the world, you know, because like I talked about...
Earth Crisis did Ozzfest.
Yeah, and yeah. And because of that, you know, people like Davey Havoc or Andy from Fall Out Boy, and I'm not saying that, you know, they went vegan because of Earth Crisis necessarily, though I guess they pretty much said that.
Yeah.
You know, how many people got into veganism because of Andy or Davey? Probably a lot. You know, there's a very direct path towards, if you have a message that you believe is worth saying, like, why would you limit the reach of that message? You know, yeah. I mean, there's a very direct path to this.
And for the most part, hardcore kids, I feel like, get it. So why would you...
Right.
Like, they, everything you're going to say at a hardcore show, the majority of the crowd understands already what you're going to say before you even say it. You know?
Right.
So why would you... You got to go speak to the kids at the Beartooth show.
Like, all those... There's all those kids there to see Motionless wearing, like, the fishnet, you know... arm stocking things, I don't know what you call those, and like the black lipstick and stuff, you know, and Jesse's talking about like, you know, about unions.
Yeah.
That's probably not a thing that they're used to bands talking about.
Oh, and, yeah, for sure.
And at least one of them is going to go, oh, that's interesting. I'm going to go look that up.
Or one of them's going to go, oh, my dad's in a union. Oh, these guys are like my dad. That's probably what's going
on. Or they might go home ask their dad about it.
Like, no, oh, totally.
What were you saying about unions the other day? Actually, this is an interesting thing to talk about on the topic of hardcore, is there's a lot of black and white thinking in hardcore. And that's probably because a lot of people talking about this stuff are 19 years old or whatever. And when you're 19, you think everything is very simple. And with things like unions or anything else that involve millions of people in very complex systems, it's not... You know, it's not that unions are good or bad, or that corporations are good or bad. Sometimes they're good, sometimes they're bad. There's a lot of shades of gray, which is the thing that hardcore is not necessarily great. There's not a lot of hardcore songs like this next song called It Depends. We should sit down and talk about it for a while because it gets complicated.
That's hilarious.
There's also not a lot of hardcore songs called Think Twice Before Sharing Your Opinion because it might alienate people and it could be a better idea to keep it to yourself until there's a better time.
Yeah, I like, you should just chill and let all the facts roll in first. That should be a song.
That's not a hardcore song.
Yeah.
Definitely not.
I feel like I've only learned that in like older age, I guess, because I was definitely quick when I was younger to just be like, take a hard stance on something, you know, and just be like, rah, rah, rah. Like I was vegetarian for a long time. And I remember having a conversation with my mom about like, I'm vegetarian because these corporations and the government, you know, like the whatever 90s excuse.
Reciting.
You know, yeah. And like, I was just so like, all in, I'm vegetarian and fuck the government, you know, kind of thing. And like, no, the older I get, I'm just kind of like, I'm just not going to say stuff because I know when I say certain things, I sound stupid, you know?
Or the other person is just not going to hear it. And all I'm going to do is drive a wedge between the two of us without improving anybody's situation. It's a lesson, you know, I got encouraged to share my opinions a lot through hardcore. And my mom always told me to share my opinion and stuff like that. And it took me until I was probably my late 20s to realize, and I still probably need to realize it on a daily basis, that sometimes it's better to, like you said, shut up, let the facts roll in, or shut up and let somebody else talk. Remember having
I like listening. That's my, just like, I'm going to listen. I'm just going to take it all in.
It's a good hack. I remember one time this design agency I was working at, the owner was this kind of real, like, old school, hard ass, like Midwestern football coach kind of guy, in a good way. He was a great guy, but he was just the kind of guy that was going to give it to you straight. And I was asking him, it wasn't really a promotion. I just wanted to take on this new sort of set of responsibilities. And I sort of laid it all out for him. Like, here's what I want to do and why, you know, I should be the one to do it. And he's like, okay, just have one question for you. I was like, what's that? He said, can you shut the fuck up and let other people talk for once? And I was like, yep.
Oh.
I was like, okay then.
And brutal. I was like, ugh. Yeah, that's brutal.
But he was right. I needed to learn that.
Yeah, I definitely, I don't know. I think I got in shit with like a group of friends of mine a long time ago, where I realized, like, I was just like, oh, I just run my mouth too much. And then I make a conscious effort to just kind of be like, okay, what's everybody saying? All right, cool.
It's hard for me to imagine you as that person.
I also used to have a very bad temper, which is kind of crazy. When I was a kid, I'd be like trying to, like, learning how to play guitar and tuning a string, and then I'd break a string, and then I'd go into the hallway and just like bust up drywall.
Wow.
You know, like, I was not chill.
What changed that? That seems like the exact opposite of who you are now.
Yeah, I don't know. Honestly, I think I just started realizing those things about myself and then going like, oh, this is not a good person. I don't want to hang out with that person. So I definitely don't want to be that person.
Yeah.
So now it's just like, I don't know. Maybe now, I mean, all of these changes happened before I became a dad, but now that I'm a dad, it's even like, I'm like even more hippie.
Yeah.
Shit. So.
Well, it's scary how much, we don't have kids, but we spend a fair amount of time around our niece and nephew. And it's really scary how much they mirror your behavior.
Totally.
For better or for worse.
Yeah, it doesn't matter what you tell them. They're just going to mimic your own actions. So, because I could tell my, Allison, I'll have to tell my kid something like 20 times. But if I, like, she just started saying, like, damn it. Because if I do something, I'll be like, God damn it. Damn it. Uh-huh. You know, like that. And I could tell her over and over again not to say it, but she's already just like, oh, damn, it's fucking cool.
Right. Right.
Like, I'm just like, ah.
When daddy doesn't get what he wants, he punches the wall.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm glad I'm not like that anymore. I mean, my wife probably wouldn't have had a kid with me. So,
yeah, she's.
Yeah, we probably wouldn't even be together.
Right.
If I was still that person. So,
well, if you don't mind me asking, what did change for you having a kid? She's like,
five. Jeez. Yeah, she's five. I don't. That's a tough question. All the super cheesy things you probably heard before about having a kid, mm-hmm, are 1,000% true. But the way I try to describe it the most to people who don't have kids is, I thought I understood love, and I thought that I was like a selfish person before having a kid. You know, like, I'd be like, oh no, I'm giving and I'll share with, mm-hmm, my friends and stuff like that. But you don't realize, I feel like now I realize, like, oh, I'm truly selfless. Like, I can, like, go without so my kid can have something, you know? And that's the thing for me that's the most, like, I feel like I noticed that with other, like, friends of mine who are parents and stuff too, and friends of mine who don't have kids. Like, it's almost like I'm not trying to talk down to someone who doesn't have a kid, but I feel like people are just more selfish, you know? There's, sure, probably parents out there who are still selfish, because there's parents out there who beat their kids, and I don't understand that either. But it's like, I used to, like, spend X amount of money on shoes, and I used to, like, just do all this stuff, and now it's like, I could be eating something and so hungry, and my daughter could just be like, I need that, I'm hungry, and I don't even hesitate. Like, I wouldn't be like, oh, I'm so hungry, I need nutrients. I would give her all of the nutrients without even thinking, you know?
Is that a switch that just kind of flipped, or is that something, it doesn't sound like you had to work on it?
No, I think for me, I feel like it just happened. It was like, she's born, and now I'm in this, like, I have to make sure she's surviving. And now she's like a little person with a personality and everything. And it's like, I don't know. It's crazy. Maybe it's also fucks them up if you give them too much shit. You know, I don't know. Nobody knows how to parent, I guess.
Well, I've heard that there's a pretty common thing with men where they, for like the first 6 months or a year, don't really have that kind of emotional connection with their kid.
Oh, I had it immediately. It was insane. My daughter was born. We had a home birth, but when she first came out, we had like a midwife at the house and she wasn't breathing.
Right? Oh, wow.
At first, like it was just like, they put her on my wife's chest.
Is that normal?
I don't know. I've only had one kid, yeah. So it's normal to me. But I was terrified, you know? And my wife starts like hitting her. She's like, she's not breathing. Make her cry. Make her cry. I'm like, the midwife and like my wife are smacking the shit out of her. And basically the midwife just kind of like pushed me out of the way. Like I was like this useless bag of meat just in the way, like in shock, you know? And then when she started crying, I just left my wife with her, you know? Like it was too overwhelming for me. I just left and went and like sat on the stairs, like outside, and just, I cried. Like I couldn't like handle, like I was just like, this is insane. Like everything about it was all of a sudden just like, I'm a new person. This is crazy. Right. How do I do this? Like bananas.
The thing that is weird to me, or I guess intimidating to me, I'm not super worried about, you know, being a decent parent, you know, in year two or three or something, but it's like the first night of like,
oh, the first
night. Okay, here's a kid that you have to take care of.
She had her, I think the first night she slept through the night pretty good. And I was like, oh, we got this. This is no problem. And the second night she was just like, like typical baby shit that you see in movies that you're like, mm-hmm. And I'm running around like holding this baby, looking at my wife going, we can't do this. We don't know what we're doing. We have no idea what we're doing. It's fucking banana. It's so insane.
But everybody else figures it out. I mean, you think about like even total idiots end up being perfectly good parents. And if they can figure it out, then anybody can.
Yeah, there's definitely like, I feel like there's just like, you feel like there's new emotions and stuff that like didn't exist before. And I feel like it's similar. If you talk to another parent, you don't even really have to talk about it. It's like, I feel like they just get it or whatever. And when you're talking to someone else, I feel like it would be like trying to explain a color to a blind person, you know, like you can't, I wouldn't even know how to try to explain the color blue to someone who's never seen blue before, you know? So that's, yeah, I feel like it just changes you.
Well, I'm looking forward to it. So when it happens,
are you guys having a baby?
Not anytime. I mean, not currently. I mean, it's not happening now, but
oh, it's gonna be awesome.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. So I'll probably ask you for some pointers when it happens.
Now it's funny because I get hit up a lot from different people who tour, who are about to have kids that are just like, oh, how do you do it? Blah blah blah. Like how's this gonna work? Like you're just freaking out. It's like kind of cool that there's like a whole group of like dads.
It is cool.
That like hit me up and asked for advice and stuff. And I have friends that I hit up and ask them for advice. So
cool. We're running out of time here. So thank you so much for making time for this. Always good to see you. And we'll see you next time.
Well, hey, friends, my name is Zach Lupitin. You may know me from the band Dust Bowl Revival, but I also host a music discovery podcast called The Show on the Road. For the last 5 seasons, I've been able to dive deep and have intimate chats with folks like The Lumineers, Ani DeFranco, Wolf Peck, Keb Moe, Lake Street Dive, Bela Fleck, and more. So guess what? After 150 conversations with some of my favorite songwriters from around the world, we are bringing brand new episodes to the Osiris Network. New interviews and intimate acoustic performances will be coming at you this summer. And which episodes are coming next, you ask? Good
morning. I am Zach Goody, the lead singer for the band Smash Mouth.
Our band is called Milky Chance. We are based in Berlin.
My name is David Shaw. I sing and write songs with my band, The Revivalists.
Trust me, these conversations go some wild places. So subscribe to The Show on the Road on Osiris, and we'll see you soon.
Hey, this is Aaron from No Simple Road. I'm inviting you to come hang out with Apple, Mel, and I as we talk with the musicians, artists, chefs, authors, and beyond from the world that turns us on. We're reaching into the improvisational music scene, the psychedelic culture, the festival world, and getting to know what makes the people tick that create those scenes. Come join us on the long, strange trip over at No Simple Road.